Welcome, everybody. We invite you to pull up a chair, kick off your shoes, and listen to some great sales stories with that personal pilgrim on the 405, Will Crist, as he wanders in search of the latest techniques and technologies that will let you blaze new trails in today's new world of sales. It all starts right now with your own personal guide and personal pilgrim, Will Crist.
Well, this has been an interesting week. I'm finding companies who are reframing their vision of the economy. 3 months ago, I heard lots of CEOs complaining about how bad the marketplace was. They told me how difficult it was to sell in an economy where businesses just weren't buying. Well, I often ask them what they were doing to sell when their customers weren't buying. And sometimes they looked at me as if I were from another planet. We can't sell when our customers aren't buying, some would say to me. We're just hemorrhaging money. We're just spending money to keep our people together, even in the midst of layoffs and cutbacks and all the cost economies they could find. They were still losing money, taking money out of retained earnings or from credit lines to keep the company going. Well, I'm beginning to hear a different story. At least I'm hearing a different frame around the same facts. I'm beginning to hear CEOs tell me they're no longer focusing on what customers weren't buying, which was all those widgets they were trying to sell. They instead are focusing on finding out what customers want to buy. And when they come to know that, then they can recreate their company to meet the needs, hopes, and dreams of their customers. Now, all those CEOs who were spending retained earnings or dipping into credit lines to keep doing the same things that they were doing 3 years ago said they were hemorrhaging money. Their cry was, stop the hemorrhaging. Now, as these CEOs begin to reframe their business, they can also reframe how they look at their cash flow. First of all, CEOs who are looking at what their customers are willing to buy are finding that there's really four categories that CEOs stay up at night worrying about. Number one is how to save money. Number two is how to generate more revenue. Three is how to keep the employees happy and productive and keep them on board. And four is how to retain their current customers and make them delighted. Now, when companies can demonstrate how they can do these things, they'll find an eager ear. It's not easy to reframe the company, to recalibrate the company, to change the company to meet those needs. It takes investment. We've always known that. CEOs are very familiar with investing for the future. And that's what I'm hearing as the turn. Because rather than seeing the cash flow as hemorrhaging money, I'm beginning to hear people talking about investing in the future. It's the same funds, it's the same balance statement, but instead of seeing it as a negative hemorrhaging, we're now seeing it as investing for the future because we've begun to see the direction that we can go in meeting the needs of customers who are out there. When we find what those customers' needs, hopes, and dreams are, recalibrate the company to meet some of those needs, we're reframing our language, our conversation. It will change the whole culture of the company as the CEOs begin to do that. And this has to do with the values that a company has. Now, the next person we're going to have on the show has built his company around a set of values. And I want to spend a little time with him talking about how those values have been impacted with the economy, the change in how we do business. I want him to talk a little bit about how he does sales while maintaining those specific values. And this is Danny Counts, who is the CEO of USCAD, a very significant company in the Orange County economy. Danny, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Will.
Tell me a little bit about how USCAD came into business.
Well, originally we started, two individuals. We both came out of the industries that we serve, which typically are the engineering and architectural industries. So we basically did what we sell, So we came out of those industries, came together, and basically aligned our business with a company by the name of Autodesk, which globally is the market leader for CAD and engineering design software. And by bringing on that partnership with them, we were able to sell their technology into the marketplace here in Southern California and beyond, as well as provide a variety of services around those technologies. So both myself and my business partner come out of those industries, so we really have a good understanding what our customers are dealing with, you know, the types of projects that they work on. And instead of working within in those industries, we're essentially now leading those industries and being a consultative partner to those companies.
Well, talk to me a little bit about how the you talk, you know, on your website, you talk a lot about the vision, the mission, the values of the company. How did those come about?
Well, I think for us, you know, it really comes from our own personal core values. And myself and my business partner, it's very important that first you see eye to eye with those you choose to partner with. Fortunately, we share the goals of being, you know, completely honest with our customers, making sure that although, you know, some of the vendor partnerships we have, you know, you've heard the term Kool-Aid. There's a certain amount of Kool-Aid in our industry as in other industries. What our job is to ensure that we filter that with our customers and make sure we give them the straight scoop as to what the technologies offer, what they can do for their businesses, and also be completely honest and upfront with them on what it's going to take in using those technologies successfully, what they're going to have to, where they're going to have to make investments in order to use those technologies successfully within their organization. So that's really where it came from for us, is that we want to be completely honest about what it's going to take for our customers to get to the next level with the products and services that we sell. And that's where the honesty and the integrity and the values that we came up with for our company.
Now, have these values, were they there from the very beginning of your partnership? Have they come up later?
No, I would say those core values have really been a part of us ever since the beginning. No question about that.
And talk to me about what this has this commitment to customers ever cost you anything?
I think it has, absolutely. And I think the best way to explain that is if we were to go into any specific customer and we were to, as I said, recommend everything that we think is needed for them to be successful, that typically comes with sometimes a sizable investment. And as I'm sure you're aware, sometimes customers will regardless of how much value and demonstrating the all the value that they can achieve by making that investment, sometimes they're just not able to do it at that time. But what it allows us to do down the road is when there is an opportunity for them to make that investment, or perhaps they try to shortcut, you know, they will typically come back to us and say, you know, this didn't work. We should have done what you told us to do in the first place. We should have made that investment at that time. We would be ahead of where we are now. Whereas if we did not share that, if we were not completely honest with them about what it would take, then that would be a very bad situation for us if they came back to us a year later and said, hey, why didn't you tell me this? This is, I see what I really needed to do, and you didn't tell me to do it in that fashion. So we realize that we won't always get the business right then because of the sizable investment that it may require when we, again, demonstrate all of the services and things that they're going to need to do.
So it's cost you sometimes to maintain that commitment to putting your customers' needs first. Talk to me about how this commitment to your staff has worked out.
Sure. I think we've, you know, especially during the last couple of years, you know, it's been more difficult as far as maintaining staff, as I heard you mention just a moment ago on your program. And so we recognize now more than ever that the commitment to our staff is really has to be at the forefront of our mind. It's not as if we took that for granted in the past. I don't believe we did, but it certainly has moved to the forefront of our mind to ensure that, you know, we're doing as much as we can for our staff, making sure that they feel that they're appreciated, make sure that they feel that they're important. I'm certainly not the best at doing that. I think that's where it's good to have a team of, managers or individuals within the organization that can help you do that. But it is so critical, especially during the times that we're living in.
Now, what kind of effect has the last 3 years had on your company?
What kind of effect? Well, certainly first and foremost, we've seen a fairly significant revenue drop. We saw that from calendar year 2008 to 2009, and that was the first time that we had ever seen any sort of decrease. We came into business in 1999, and fortunately, we were able to generate increasing revenues every year. So that would be the first thing that we experienced. And the other thing that was difficult with that revenue drop is that, hindsight all is being 2020. We made pretty significant investments prior to that, and then of course, as a result of the revenue drop, we had to quickly scale down to fit within where that new revenue mark ended up, which was very difficult to determine where it was going to end up.
Now, did that affect the offerings that you made to your customers? Did you discover they wanted different things?
It really didn't. One of the things that we were very set on as we, had to go through some downsizing, there was no way we could avoid that. So we had to go through that. And, the last thing that we looked at was personnel, but we knew that eventually it was probably going to come to that. And when we went through that process of downsizing personnel, as it turns out, we did a pretty good job of maintaining all of our technical resources. Our technical resources are individuals that come out of the industries we serve, like the architectural and the engineering industries. And as it turned out, we did not lose any headcount within our technical ranks in terms of numbers of technical people. We may have had a little turnover where we lost one and brought on another, but we were able to maintain the number of technical resources we had.
Mm-hmm. So do you have competition?
Yes, we do.
So with this competition, how are you motivating your own salespeople right now to go after market share?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's a tough balance right now because we've always, like a lot of companies, we've always prided ourselves on being the best, having those best technical industry resources that we have, really demonstrating the value to the customers and sometimes, in some cases, letting our customers know that, we're not the cheapest on the block, and here's why. What's changed is we still do that. We still strive for that. I think that's important to always demonstrate that value, but we've also recognized more so than ever that there's a growing part of the market where even sometimes within your most loyal customers where they're having to make a pricing decision, whereas previously, you didn't have to have that type of discussion with those loyal customers. Now we have to sometimes, and it's kind of changed our, with the competitive pressures out there, it's kind of changed our the way that we sell into some of those customers, those loyal customers. But in terms of grabbing additional market share, we've also recognized with some of that additional market share that we want to bring on, it's going to be very price competitive, and we're going to have to operate on lower margins with some of the business. The goal would be to hopefully transact some of that business in a quicker fashion since we're not realizing as much margin on those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm curious about as a CEO, how do you motivate your senior management?
Mm-hmm. Well, another very difficult thing, motivating any and all employees during these types of times. I think more recently we've empowered our senior management more so than in the past. You know, maybe sometimes that comes with additional things that we need from them, but you know, explaining why we need them to do additional types of duties within the organization, the importance of those types of things, giving them more oversight and decision-making capability within the organization. It's a big relief to me because I, you know, I more now than ever before, I realize I can't do this on my own. Never claimed I could, but it's nice to have those types of individuals around you that you can empower to help you, you know, along the way and navigating through this type of economy that we're in right now.
Are you in touch with other CEOs in Orange County?
I am.
Have you heard anything like this from them?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seems to be fairly rare to find a CEO or you know, someone that has an understanding of the financial aspects of a company. It seems to be rare to find someone that has not been impacted, you know, by what we've experienced over the last couple of years. But it's something that I really want to do quite a bit more of, because I just think there's a lot of good things that can come out of information sharing and kind of best practices and, you know, what's worked for me. You know, here's something I'm experiencing now. Has anybody dealt with that type of issue? And so that's something I'm definitely interested in doing a lot more of in the future.
Okay. Now, talk to me about what your marketing strategy is. Like the last time you talked to your marketing manager, what advice did you give her?
I don't recall what specific advice I gave her. You know, as far as our strategy for marketing, you know, we, as much as possible, what we try to do, and there's always the one-offs, but as much as possible, we do a pretty thorough, you know, planning around what our business objectives are for the year. We do that sometimes cooperatively with our primary vendor. And then based on what those business objectives are for the year, we really try to align our marketing plans, our marketing campaigns with those business objectives to really drive the type of activity that we want to drive. And then, of course, we have situations where one-off types of situations pop up and little promos become available, and you know, that may be related to our business objectives, maybe not, that we have to react to.
Is there any research that you're doing right now with your customers to find out what additional needs they have, or do you figure you pretty well know what they are?
Well, I think one of the things that has changed kind of this, as far as the sales process and what we're doing more of today than we have in the past. I mean, it seemed a few years ago, you know, it was so much easier, obviously. Whenever you would go to sales training, they would say, you know, you need to focus on business value, and which is true. Those are very important things. You know, what's the business benefit to a company? How is it going to help affect their bottom line? But it seemed like a few years ago, you know, we barely had to pick up the phone and we were just making lots of revenue. And of course, a lot of companies were at that time. So what's different now is that, you know, we really do have to relearn how to sell. We really do have to demonstrate that business value at a very, at an upper management level within the organization. It's not as much about selling features and capabilities of the technology. You used to be able to sell that way. Now it's about how is this going to make a dramatic impact to their business, because nobody's buying on features and functionality anymore. People are buying because they're maybe losing projects. And so that's the difference that we're seeing today, is that we're trying to find where the money is in terms of what types of projects are being funded. And we have tools available to us where we can see the actual projects and how much money is within that project, and then we can also see which companies, meaning our customers, which of our customers are participating on those projects, and then we target them based on that. And we have you know, we have some good information. When we call them, we can say, hey, I know that you are, you know, a part of this particular project. Have you considered A, B, and C?
Let me take just a little break here, Danny, and tell the listening audience that we have a new tool on octalkradio.net. You can go and where it says community chat room, if you have a Twitter account, you can sign up. I mean, you can simply put in your Twitter account name and ask questions, and we'll monitor that. And if there's have questions for Danny or comments, we'll be right on it. So back to you, Danny. I was wondering how. I've heard from other CEOs that where before they were selling to the users, they were selling technological solutions to end users, more in the IT department, and now they're finding that they are, in order to make the sale, they really have to go up to the C level. Are you finding, is that what you're talking about?
It really is, and I think a testament to that is, you know, that's what I'm doing. So, you know, I've kind of put out there to a lot of my staff here that, you know, if we're going to spend money, you know, there has to be a really good business case for it. And I'm absolutely, as all of my staff I'm sure can attest to, I'm absolutely much more involved in every dime that gets spent than I was in the past. And so if I'm doing that, I'm certain that all other CEOs and senior management would also want to do that. And so they're taking a much more active role in making those purchasing decisions. Whereas in the past, when, you know, the money was more free-flowing, and they had other things they were concerned about, certainly their IT department, that would be fine as far as them making those types of decisions. I just think, you know, the things we're learning right now, the things that we're having to put into practice right now, you know, I sincerely hope for myself I can maintain some of those things when times get very profitable and productive again, and I hope others can do the same.
Well, are you finding that it requires a different skill set for your salespeople?
That's exactly it. As I mentioned before, it's something we've always heard we have to sell in this fashion, but over the past several years, we never really had to learn how to sell in that fashion because the phones were ringing off the hook. That's not the case anymore. So absolutely, we've made it very clear to our sales staff that we can no longer sell to the end users. We can no longer have as much success selling to what we typically call in our industry CAD managers or CAD management or IT professionals. We have to get to senior management now and really develop a strong business case for them to make the investment. And typically that seems to come off better by finding out the projects that certain customers are winning and then going to those customers that are losing and saying, you know, why didn't you win this project? What could you have done to win this project?
So can I ask you a tough question?
Yes.
Are you, when you tell your salespeople to do those things, do you find that they are doing them?
What I have found is that, and you know, I don't necessarily fault our salespeople for this, but I think with anyone, probably including me, we have to continue to deliver the same message over and over and over again. We have opportunities to do that through our own internal sales meetings, but I think it's important that you are consistent in delivering that message. You can't just deliver it once and expect that it's going to stick. As you continue to deliver it, and then as you start to develop a couple successes, then it starts to take off at a much faster pace.
Okay. Now, tell me a little bit about how you structure your job. I think this would be helpful to people, especially as what you mentioned, that CEOs are being much more involved in purchasing decisions than they were 3 years ago. And that must be true. I mean, you said that was true for you as well.
That's right.
I'm also hearing that you are more involved in, if not managing, at least monitoring the sales force, their behaviors and their results. How are you structuring your time? Now, you didn't get 80 hours in a day, did you, by any chance?
No.
Okay.
Of course, this week I feel like 24
hours that we have.
Pardon me?
You have the same 24 hours that we have in a
day. That's right. I only work half days, though, 12 hours a day.
Okay. All right. So how are you structuring your time to get all those things done?
Well, over the past week, it's been a little different since our controller's been out, so I've been pulling triple, quadruple duty. But other than that, I am taking a much more active role, you know, as I used to, with our sales individuals, also with our customers, making sure that myself and Daniel Hebert, my business partner, are out there visiting customers as much as possible. So I'm trying to ensure that I spend, I would say, about 20% of my time out in front of customers. If I can get out at least one day a week, then I know I've accomplished something. That makes me feel good. You know, we're constant. You know, we're a small company. Still, we're constantly dealing with different sales opportunities in the office here. So, I'm involved with all the different opportunities that are coming up with the different sales individuals. To a certain extent, I still, since I come out of the industry and understand the technology, I spend a little bit of my time just really understanding the technological advances that we're seeing within the various product lines and various industries, so I have the ability to educate the industry on what's happening. So I spend some time doing that as well. So a lot of different hats, and it's really just comes down to, you know, planning my schedule and organizing my time is, you know, just using the tools we have available to us.
Do you find that it's sort of like going back to that more entrepreneurial space when you were starting up?
I do, absolutely. I feel like right now I feel like we're in the process of rebuilding, you know, because mm-hmm. we all got hit by a freight train, it feels like. And now I feel like we've kind of, you know, sensed the bottom here. You can never be too sure, but now I feel like we're in this process of rebuilding. And fortunately, I've got some good people around me, so I don't have to do it alone, and we can do that together.
Well, that's wonderful. Rebuilding, reframing, recalibrating, all those are words that I'm hearing, and I'm happy to hear you say the same thing, that whether the economy has changed, CEOs have changed the way that they talk about that economy, because what I'm hearing from you is you now have a trajectory that you're on to rebuild rather than to be lying in the gutter after being hit by that freight train, and I think that's commendable.
Thank you. That's right.
Now, tell me, who would you like to speak to? If you had a megaphone, who would you like to speak to, and what would you like to tell them that you could do for them, either to help them increase their revenue, reduce their cost, keep their employees productive and happy, or retain their current customers? Who would you like to talk to, and what would you like to say?
That's a good question. I mean, they're all very important things. I think for myself, one of the areas that I've perhaps grown more is, you know, working with our employees and ensuring that our employees are happy. And I've got a lot to learn there still, but I think that's an area that I certainly would like to talk with others about and help them understand the importance of doing that all along, as opposed to just doing it, you know, after we experience something that we have over the last couple of years. You know, in cutting costs, probably not so much. Increasing revenues, that's another area that I would definitely love to speak to others about and help them understand some of the things that we're doing that we feel are leading us in the right direction.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to say to fellow business owners in Orange County before we finish up here, and tell us how we can get in touch with you?
Yeah, so as far as getting in touch with me personally, anyone can go to our website, uscad.com, uscad.com, and they will find our contact information there, and they can just ask for me by name, and they can get in touch with me there. But I would just want to encourage, I think that the main thing that I want to learn for myself is the same thing that I would encourage every other CEO out there to learn is, you know, when we kind of think about what we've gone through over the last couple of years and how we've changed as individuals, what we're doing now that we know is the right way to conduct ourselves within our businesses that perhaps we weren't doing as much in the past when times were good. Let's hope that we can maintain some of those types of qualities and some of those things that we've learned as we experience the good times again. You know, hopefully we're all a little smarter, a little wiser now after going through this, but I think it's critically important that we remember, you know, where we came from and try to maintain that.
Well, wonderful. I really do appreciate you taking taking some time to be with us today, Danny. It's a real pleasure and a privilege to have you on the show. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Will.
A company that is reframing, recalibrating, taking a look at how they can meet the needs of their customers. It's a privilege to talk to CEOs who have such a grasp of a trajectory of rebuilding and moving forward. There's no question in my mind that lots of CEOs have made the turn in their own attitudes, moving from hemorrhaging to investing. Our next guest is a wonderful guy. I have known Lance for many years, and Lance has had clients who've been around for 30 years or more. And so he has been with them in ups and downs and all sorts of moves. But Lance is always a premier financial advisor. He's a full equity partner at Tax and Financial Group. And I especially look forward to talking with Lance to help CEOs refocus on the value and the importance of that revenue generating entity called their business. So welcome to Pilgrim Talks, Lance.
Will, thanks for having me.
I think we're going to have a great time. Tell me a little bit about, this is not the first economic downturn that you've gone through with your customers and your clients.
No, not at all, Will. You know, in fact, I started right after the Jimmy Carter years and watched tax brackets up over 75%, and then Reagan came in and reduced taxes and started the engine up. But let's just say each year, even if the bias is up, there's always some companies down. It just so happens that the bias is more down today than up, but there's still companies up today too. So every year there's some companies that are not doing so well. Today it's just more prevalent.
What sorts of things are you seeing in the marketplace right now?
Excuse me one more time, Will?
What sorts of things are you seeing in the marketplace right now?
Okay, what I'm seeing is people all the way from two ends of an extreme. One extreme is, you know, something's going wrong when somebody that you know very well in business, you call him to say hello, how's it going? And he says, it took me 30 minutes to find my cell phone and it was in the pocket right where it belongs. You know you got to go see him because he's dysfunctioning, because things aren't going right in his life. Down to hearing people say, hey, I'm just fine, and 2 weeks later they take a credit hit on their receivables and they say, up, it's not fine anymore. And so what's gone on in the marketplace is a downgrade or gradation of the cash flow that comes into a business, the credit that's available to business, and the operational cash that's available is short on a lot of businesses, and that becomes what's called a swan dive problem for many people.
Now, one of the things that I've heard you talk about very often is the effect that this particular economic downturn has had on people who were within sight of retirement, or at least they thought their plan for retirement was solid. And I've heard you talk about a number of things that you could do to help them restore that hope, that dream for retirement. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Sure, Will. Well, let's say that they're moving forward, just like walking straight down a block toward financial freedom. They see it, they taste it, they're a couple of years away, and all of a sudden they slide backward. And there's an old saying on ice, if you take two steps forward and three steps, you slide backward. How do you get ahead in this world? The answer is to turn around and go the other way. So to answer your question, people haven't come across real estate and business and stocks all going down at the same time. We've had markets where the stock world was down, but real estate was up, and it kind of pushes your net worth. Or real estate's down, and the stock market's up, and it pushes your net worth, and neither of them had any impact on business. This is a time where if you take a teeter-totter and put real estate and stocks on it, it's like it cracked in half and both of them went down. And that caused credit available on the housing. Of course, there's a credit crunch out there, as we all know, to cars, boats, planes, businessmen, lines of credit on anything. But this is the first time that's happened that everything fell all at once. And I always say, what went up in 08 except debt? But here's the main crisis that came up for the small businessmen who's having difficulty today. Not all of them are, I want to say, but there's a prevalent amount of them, is that when you, in 08 October, freeze money, you still have payables to pay, but your receivables don't come in, and the bank has already cut your line behind you. And let's say that the company's running at $300,000 a year and somebody has personal expenses and writes all those checks out of pocket, depleting cash, because receivables barely trickled in October. The next month, sometimes a lot of these businesses had to write it out of cash again, but cash has been paying so poorly, 1%, 0.5%, 0.25%. People weren't all tied up in cash. They had bought bigger homes because homes were going up. They bought stocks because stocks were going up. They bought buildings because buildings were going up. And all of a sudden, their cash is all tied up, and everything they put it in is going down. So if you didn't have cash, you couldn't take purchase orders. And so, you know, that becomes a domino effect in the small business. That domino effect carried out creates one company, doesn't another that has to pay their bills and can't pay their bills, and it just keeps on rippling through there. We felt that ripple for well over a year. It does seem to be settling down right now, and a lot of people that needed to be rescued, repaired, and restored back to whole are feeling much more comfortable. But those that haven't had the help out there probably are still feeling a little bit desperate. Where do I go? What do I do? It's like being punch drunk.
So how would somebody know they needed to talk to you, Lance?
Well, if they're worried about money, if they're worried about their business, if they're just having any level of worry that keeps them up at night in regard to any of their financial affairs, it'd be a great opportunity to sit down and fix it with them or figure out the best of solutions. Not everything's perfect, Will, as you know, but a higher perfection or a higher intelligent level could achieve a higher result, therefore up the probability that that person's still in business.
Talk to me a little bit about some of the, don't tell me names, but tell me a little bit about some of the successes that you've had with your clients in the past couple of years.
Sure. 2 years ago in April, on a preliminary meeting, a long-term client that's become a good friend and friend of the family came to us and sat in front of a group of people and said, I'm in deep trouble. Here's my situation. And the facts and figures were that his sales had dropped to $100,000 and his break-even was $140,000, and all of his lines were tapped out, no equity available in his house. He was scared. And first of all, a deer in the headlights do not make good decisions. So sometimes you need somebody from the outside to be cold, callous, and make good decisions during a time where your mind isn't working correctly. So we laid down what's called the ABC plan of turnaround. Simply in his case, we had to renegotiate a lease. We scrubbed off $5,000 a month or half the lease off. We returned a BMW that was $2,000 a month. And we went to his trade creditors and asked them to leave a month of cash in his business by allowing him to pay it every second Wednesday of the month with a percentage over a 10-month run rate, which left him cash in the company because he was cash starved. that worked for some time, except cells got worse and eroded. And then he came in and we had to do the DEF of turnaround, which is the tactical 16-week, you got to do this to make it or break it. And Will, I'm happy to say that the gentleman went up to the 140, which wasn't out of the hole, it was just break even. And now that we're hitting July, he's sending me text messages all the time that the months are somewhere in the 240 and 250,000 a month, making money again like he should have. But there was one time that he spent 3 days in a row looking at bankruptcy on the internet and was magnetically attracted toward bankruptcy, thinking that's the only way out. And the way out was to fight, work hard, be smart, and work on a 16-week plan and stick to the plan called tactical planning.
Well, what did he do to change sales? Because his sales went up. What did he do to change sales?
First of all, he had to get out of the office and not look at the internet, and he had to have great reliance on the people in the office to back him up. Understand, in a simple world, the dinosaurs of businesses still go out, let's say, to La Puente one day, and then they go to San Clemente the next day, and the next day they go back to La Puente, instead of loading all their trips in one direction at one time to be efficient with your time. Number two, a full analysis of each product line to see where his profit margins were. He never realized that one of the products he rarely promoted had the highest profit margin, and the biggest product that he promoted sometimes actually was at a net loss. So from efficiency of traveling, efficiency of product placement, and he also started to communicate much more broadly. These are the whole range of services when he was already put into a niche, say one product when he had 20. So he created a simple diagram on a piece of paper and showed all the products and simply asked, what are your budgets in all these areas? And let me put a proposal together. That was one of the successful things. The number two was, you have to go out every day. You can't be sitting in the office looking at the internet at anything. And each day you have to be able to bring back this much business to survive. Don't come back until you create that much business. It took him a while to begin with. He was calling me late in the evening, and then it was earlier and earlier. And then lastly on it, interconnecting him with other people that I knew needed his product. That helped a lot because relationships are some of the most powerful things. So many doors were open to him from past relationships, and other people like myself gave him other opportunities, and that catapulted him into what he called the dinosaur world, into the new tech world. That's a great success story because, Will, I got to tell you, when you got to tell your children they're coming out of private school, the business is closing, and we're selling the house, that's one dream turned nightmare. And the other one is he just came down and took me out to dinner and said, my oldest daughter, we just went to orientation at USC. That's the way the dream was supposed to be ended.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Now, are there lots of stories like that?
There are dozens upon dozens of repeating stories like that. Houses that need to be saved. People that are so tight that they can't hire somebody to help them see the trees through the forest. Because if it doesn't work, the house is gone. And if it does work, the house is saved, but they don't know who to trust, who to hire, who's the best consultants. And, Will, I believe that 80% of people in almost any industry can't cut the grade in this type of a world. And so you have to go to that 80-20 rule and be working only with the 20% top. And if you could get to the top 10%, you've spent money wisely. They're worried that they're spending money on the 80% that can't help them. And if that be the case, more cash is tied up. But so the real answer is finding the right person through the right contact with track record proven, not just answering a cold call or somebody off the street.
So what I'm hearing is one of the reasons that people don't ask for help is that they don't know how to distinguish between what is help that's going to really help them and what is help that just winds up taking more money and not producing any results.
Right. When you're under duress and you're behind on a mortgage payment because all the cash flow is in arrears, it's very difficult to write a check to somebody hoping on hope that they're going to be able to fulfill when other people have disappointed. And yet there are true professionals out there that if that business owner writes that check, they'll have the same story my friend had. And if they don't write the check, they're going to have the nightmare. They're just afraid if they write the check, the nightmare happens earlier. And that's if you hire the wrong person. So it's very important to get quality through trusted advisors that have worked in the past with other people, the interconnectivity of this world.
So how does a business owner, what kind of tools can a business owner use to make those distinctions?
It's called trust and relationship and knowledge and being able to sync with the person that you're working with. By gut, business owners by nature have gut instinct in them. But the word consultant can be actually called a bad name sometime because you write a check that's fairly large and you say, they got the check, but I didn't get any good advice. Well, today, you don't have time to write a check and not get good advice. You have to be on task. So I would ask your top professionals for their advice because this community is a tight and small community. The best are known by many of us. If you can triangulate through a banker, a CPA, your insurance, your financial advisor, somebody quality, you're going to end up with quality. Because too many people recognize that person. If he didn't provide quality, I don't think that he belongs in the county anymore at that point. So you have to start by asking and seeking. But, Will, this is the number one thing. I have found many business owners at the last minute of a meeting will start the confession of how bad it is, not at the beginning. It's almost an embarrassment to them to work with another professional and have to say, I have to tell you something. It's very difficult. But once they tell us that they're in trouble, I believe it's our obligation not to be sympathetic or empathetic, but to jump right in and say, let's fix this problem, let's solve this problem, because if you let it go, it's, again, a domino effect, and it's going to be more difficult tomorrow than it is today.
So would it be safe to say that I'm hearing you speak to CEOs who have not shared with people, that they're still frightened, they're still with a deer in the headlights? It would be safe to say that there is hope for them, that by sharing with appropriate people, that their business can be rebuilt.
I believe entrepreneurs work harder than anyone else in the world. I was given a diagram of a bumblebee, Will, on a piece of film from an engineer with the question, does it fly or not? And I put down, of course it does. But on a piece of paper, it's not engineered right to fly. And the answer was no to an engineer. And I said, well, then how does it fly? And he says, by killing itself, plus effort. That's our entrepreneur. And he's willing to put that effort into that business to turn it around. He just needs a track to run with, somebody over top of him, because they're not used to pulling out a 16-week plan. They're not used to pulling out a business plan. They're not even used to pulling out a buy-sell agreement or any of the documents that would be normal in that drawer. They're used to doing it by gut, by feel, by relationship, by hunch. And so what they need to do is put that aside and stick to a game plan that's successful, because they could follow the dots to end up being safe again. They just don't know what those rules are or what that script is. Somebody has to get it in their hands fast and then monitor them to make sure that they're doing it. But as I'm saying, they're willing to put in the effort, because on one side, the dream is saved of life at the top, their dreams. And on the other side, it's kind of tough to find work right out there. They'll be back in line with everyone else asking for a job. It's hard to do that after you've been the employer all these years, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, now, if someone wanted help, do they have to pay or write a check before they could talk with you?
Not with me. I'm the initial guy that I would determine if they need help, at what extent. Many times, help is just simple. I call it the ABC. The ABC plan of turnaround will help 90% of the entrepreneurs. When you get into the nitty-gritty of the DEF, then I would ask one of my peers to join, and I don't charge a fee. I do this for my clients that have been with me long-term out of respect and honor of their business. and out of friendship, because I wouldn't want to lose my dream, and I don't want any one of my clients. And I'd like to say, Will, I'm very proud. Over the last 2 years, not one of them has lost their business or their house, and I can't say that for all the people out there, which I feel sorry for if that be the case. But, Will, can I step back 1 minute? You asked me about financial freedom, and that is one of the things that I get very motivated in talking about, as you know. And the quicker and the faster that you could get to freedom, it doesn't mean that you leave your business or sell your business or get an earnout of your business. Of course, those are all options. It means you're free to be at the business. You have your fare set up and your finances set up, so you're independent of the swings of the business and can still go out and do the things in life that you're passionate about, look forward to, and really the reason why you started down the path to work for yourself anyway. And one of my metaphors, as you know, is the Ben-Hur chariot race, where Ben-Hur learned every horse. Now, I always let people know, you could tie somebody up to four horses and send them in four different directions, and that's being called drawled and cornered, right? But Ben-Hur found that the fastest horse goes to the outside and the slowest, most steady to the inside, which is this shorter circle, and lined each horse up in the right path to become the winner. If he had a reversed order, he had the same horses and put the fastest on the inside and the slowest on the outside, he had no chance to win. And this metaphor is, you might have the right horses, but are they lined up in the right order to be efficient for you? And so the proposition of, even in down times, I don't want anyone to feel that they're being pushed backward from their goal of the freedom that they have worked so hard to have. And when we've had one of the most catastrophic decades since I've walked the earth, people have felt that they've gone far backwards from their goal. And our job is to move them closer to the goal faster, quicker, and easier. And that is very simple, because we do it 5 to 6 days a week and 5 times a day. Very well versed in it over the last 30 years by just learning a little bit every day on how to help somebody.